It's your friends' reactions that tell the story. It's the look on their faces when you tell them where you're going, when you announce that you're planning a holiday in Rwanda, or you're heading to Colombia, or you're about to spend a few weeks in Iran. People know those places. They've seen them on the news. They know that they're scary. They know that they're dangerous. They know that no sane traveller would actually choose to go to places that have such a bad reputation. And yet, those people are completely wrong. Because as you learn as a traveller, a bad reputation means very little. A country might have a war-torn past, and it might even have a questionable present. For travellers, though, that makes no real difference. In fact, it can often mean the experience you're about to have will be even better. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're talking about the bad boys of the travelling world. We're talking about the countries that have a dodgy reputation, and why you should go there anyway. Joining me to do this are two travellers with no shortage of shady destinations stamped in their passports. First up, he's a traveller.com.au writer who has recently returned from a guerrilla trek in Rwanda, Rob McFarland.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
Good, mate.
Excellent. Also joining us, we have Intrepid Travel's product manager for Africa and the Middle East, Jenny Gray. Hey, Jenny.
Hi, Ben.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Now, Jenny, how did you wind up copying Africa and the Middle East? Did you do something wrong, or what's the story?
I love how
there?
You use the word copying. I'd like to say that I was lucky enough to be in the right place
right,
at the right time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, these are two regions that people think of as being fairly dodgy and scary, though, right?
Oh, some people say dodgy. I say exotic.
Yeah. That's the word. That's what goes in the brochures.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, one interesting thing, I sent out an email before this to ask you about, you know, places that you've been that have bad reputations. And the first one that you put down was the USA,
which, I did.
You know, that really goes to show the sort of breadth of places that there are that can possibly be thought of as having a bad reputation, right?
I know.
Why did you think US?
I think there's just so many reasons that a country can get a bad rap, isn't
yeah.
there? I mean, when you start looking at good and bad, then you start to go down this really ambiguous road of whose perception are we talking about, what mm-hmm. makes good, what makes bad, and there's just so many different reasons, whether it's the perception of the safety, whether it's yep. guilty by association, mm-hmm. is it their
president,
their government, their human rights policies and history and unethical treatment of animals. There's just so many.
Right.
And I know plenty of people recently, and I think this is something that's really fresh in the media at the moment as well, is I know people who personally won't take their families to the United States at the moment, given
right.
what's going on, because they feel so strongly about it.
Yeah.
So again, I think it really comes down to that perception.
Yeah.
And there's so many yeah. different variables that play into it.
Yeah. And I mean, on the ground in the US, I've met some of the friendliest people of my entire life. Everyone is so nice and hospitable there.
Yeah.
But there is, I mean, although, Rob, you were actually shot at in the US, weren't you?
Oh, I was, yes.
What happened there?
And I've had some of my dodgiest experiences, I think, in
really?
The US. And I think a lot of it comes down to when you go to somewhere which has a sort of a bad reputation, you tend to go there on a tour.
Yeah.
And so it's all organized. You're with
right.
someone who sort of knows what they're doing and where they're going.
Yeah. You have a safety net, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can communicate with the locals.
Yeah.
And so you don't tend to go off and explore quite as much on your own.
Yeah.
Whereas in somewhere like the US, which I've been to a lot, I
yeah.
feel more comfortable doing that. And so I was down in the Mississippi doing a road trip, a sort of music-themed road trip.
Yeah.
And ended up in a place called Clarksdale, which is very famous for all its juke joints, where sort of the blues music came from.
Yeah.
And there's a very famous crossroads there where Robert Johnson allegedly sold his soul to the devil to
right.
learn how to play the guitar. And,
such good stories.
And, yeah, like yeah. really good. And that yeah. was the, like, Eric Clapton named his album after it. Anyway, mm-hmm. we went looking for this crossroads and we couldn't find it. And then we went to this random bar on a plantation and at 3 a.m. asked some locals, like, where is this crossroads? And this guy goes, yeah, I'll take you there. And we hopped into his ute, rolled up at this crossroads at 3 a.m. And just as we're about to get out, mm-hmm. this bullet ricochets off the side of the van.
Wow.
I was with my brother at the time and we were cowering in the back seat just saying, please don't hurt me, please don't hurt me. This guy got out, went to look for the guy.
I think it's rule number one of being shot at, isn't it? Don't go out and go look for the guy.
And realistically, it was probably a kid with a pellet gun just mucking around. But yeah, I've had a few of those sort of close calls. And that,
yeah.
But that's not something I would do in Uganda. Or,
right.
or I don't know, you know, Iraq probably, you know.
Colombia.
Any story is going to end well when it starts with, it's 3 a.m. in the morning,
yeah.
can you please take me to the crossroads?
That's true. That is a very good point.
I'm just getting yeah. into some random person's
yeah.
car.
Yeah.
It's the sort
that
of
may
thing
not have been your
feel...
sharpest decision there.
No. Yeah. yeah, there was some, you know, might have been some drinks involved.
Yeah.
But it's the sort of thing you feel more comfortable doing in somewhere like the US than you do
yeah.
in other countries.
You feel like you can push things a little bit further.
Exactly. Yeah.
yeah.
And so often you end up in slightly more fruity situations.
Fruity.
Interesting way. Yes. Now, I think it's important that we should stress that today we're going to be talking about bad countries. We're going to be saying this is a bad country, this is a bad country, blah, blah, blah. These aren't actually bad countries, are they? These are just countries that have reputations on a global scale that people seem to have in their mind, that it's a dangerous place, that it's a place that you're not going to be welcome. When in fact, for travelers, that's not really a thing at all. I think Iran, you know, Jenny, you and I are both pretty passionate about Iran.
Yeah.
But that's one of the main, really good example of that, isn't it?
It's the perfect example. I know you're not supposed to have favorite children, but I manage 39 countries and Iran is by far my favorite country. I just can't stop talking about it.
Yeah.
I've been there twice, and I think it's one of the countries that, like you said, it cops one of the worst reputations out there. There's so many misconceptions on so many different levels. And you speak to people who have never been to Iran, they'll give you five reasons. Five different people will give you five different reasons why you shouldn't go there.
Right.
You speak to someone who has been there, and they'll give you five reasons why you should go there.
Yeah.
It's just...
I mean, they'll give you one major reason why you should go there, and that's because the people there are so incredibly friendly.
The people are incredible. I'd like to think I'm pretty well traveled, but I can't think of another single country where the people are more warm, open, genuinely curious, excited to see you and to share stories with you and to make sure you're looked after as well.
Yeah. And yet you see on the news and they're part of this axis of evil and they're doing all these terrible things. And you think that doesn't gel with the country that I know and that I experienced.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, if you go looking for it, you can find anti-American graffiti and you can find people who don't agree with the American government. But I think one of the things you learn when you go to these countries that have bad reputations is that the government doesn't necessarily represent the feelings of the people on the ground. Most exactly. people don't really care about that sort of high level, you know, geopolitical stuff. They just want to have a good life and are interested in meeting people.
Totally.
Yeah.
And they're the people you meet. You're not hanging out with presidents and those people. You're meeting the people on the ground.
You're not doing it right.
I don't want to brag. and they're super happy that you're there. They're super happy that you're contributing to their economy.
Yeah.
And they want you to have a great experience like most people do when they're hosting people in their country. So I think that's a really good point. There's a massive difference between those two.
Yeah.
Those two aspects, isn't
there? Yeah. And Jenny, people do generally, I find anyway, they sort of welcome you even more warmly when you're not expected to be there. It's kind of these countries that not many tourists go to. When you do sort of show faith in a country enough to trust them with your safety and go there, people seem to really appreciate that.
Oh, definitely, definitely. People, I was blown away. And I think as the more you travel, unfortunately, sadly, we start to build up a little bit of a defensive side where, you know, someone comes up to you help you with directions and you think they're going to scam you. And in Iran, I didn't have a single moment where I felt like I was in a precarious position or that anyone was trying to take advantage. They genuinely just wanted to exchange with you.
Yeah.
They just wanted to talk to you.
Yeah.
You know. There's dodgier places in King's Cross on a Saturday night.
I live in King's Cross. I can tell you all about.
I'm sure there's good parts of King's Cross now too. Yeah.
Rob, you went to Rwanda. Did people think? Mm. Did any of your friends think you're insane for signing up for that?
A little bit. I mean, I think Africa in general gets a bit of a bad rap.
Genocide takes a long time to go away in people's minds, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And I mean, I'm going to rave about Rwanda in the same way that you guys rave about Iran, because considering that genocide...
No, Iran's better.
Have you been to Rwanda?
Yeah, I've not, actually.
Oh, well, there you go. considering that genocide happened literally 24 years ago, I think, that renaissance, that recovery that country had is nothing short of miraculous.
Right.
And it's now voted the safest country in Africa. It's one of the most prosperous. It's litter-free. It's very safe. And so I went with some sort of, I guess, apprehension about it.
Yeah.
And I was totally blown away. I mean, the gorilla trekking experience in itself is mm-hmm. extraordinary. It's by far the most memorable animal encounter that I've ever had. But the country as a whole and how they've healed from that, you know, genocide is just, incredible.
Absolutely amazing. Although I did the gorilla trek in Uganda, which is sort of part of that same impenetrable forest area, which three countries meet at. And my guides were carrying machine guns around. And I said to them, like, guys, what are you doing? Like, that's surely those aren't for gorillas. And they're like, no, they're not for gorillas. They're for gorillas. No, the other type of gorillas who are you know, wandering around the forest still.
Yeah. And I know even recently some rangers were killed in, I think it was Uganda or it might be in the Congo. And so that stuff definitely still happens there.
Yeah.
But the countries have realized it's such a lucrative tourism opportunity that they're now, you know, trying to prevent that poaching and trying to put as much security together as possible.
Yeah.
But I didn't really have any hesitations going to Rwanda. Yeah. And having been there and come back, I'd rave about it to the council.
Did you get to meet a lot of locals when you were there?
Some. I mean, we were on a tour, and so you tend to be a little bit incubated from a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And so most of our guides were local. Yeah. And as we were walking around, we met a lot of local kids and people in villages. Yeah. And again, they were just really excited that we were there and welcomed us there and really friendly and just happy to see tourists back in a country. I mean, anyone over 40 in that country has firsthand memories and knowledge of that genocide. And so I was amazed at just how upbeat and enthusiastic they were.
Jenny, do you get frustrated that people tend to think of Africa as this homogenous block where everything, there's Ebola, there's genocide, there's, whereas in fact it's a series of a lot of different countries with a lot of different political situations and...
Vastly different in many cases.
Is that frustrating to you? Because so many people say, I'm going to Africa. I was like, right,
I like that, don't you?
Yeah.
Jeez, how long are you going for?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I do get frustrated.
Yeah.
There's so many different ends of the spectrum depending on where you want to go to.
I mean, there were people saying, I was in Kenya recently and this, the people who work for tourism there were having this terrible time because no one was going there because of Ebola. And they were saying basically Ebola, where the Ebola outbreak was, is closer to London than it is to Nairobi.
Absolutely.
But people just think of it as that's what happens in Africa.
Yeah. And there was more direct flights in and out of Europe than there was into any of the major cities in Africa. But people just lumped it all in together and completely wiped it off their radar for a lot longer than anyone expected as well. Years for it to really recover.
Yeah. Which countries would you really encourage people to go to that they may not have thought about in Africa?
That I've personally been to? Uganda.
Yeah.
Absolutely, Uganda. And of course, because of the guerrilla experience. But I think it's also an incredible destination where it's not quite as set up as Rwanda is. So it's a little bit more rural. It's a little bit more untouched, a little bit less touristic.
Geographically
this point.
Stunning as well. There's this
beautiful
sort of area that they call the Switzerland of Africa, which is these sort of rolling green hills. And it's amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Also, I went to the market in Kinshasa. No, not in Kinshasa.
not Kinshasa.
In Kampala. Also, I went to the market in Kampala. and you can eat, they have deep fried grasshoppers there. I don't know if you tried them, but there's these sort of women sitting around these huge bags of grasshoppers just picking the wings off and throwing them into this vat of boiling oil. Quite delicious. Tastes like chips with brains.
I've had some interesting African treats, so to speak, but they have not one of them.
I mean, Africa is probably going to be a while before it's known as a foodie destination.
But do they have that tagline, tastes like chips with brains?
They do,
it?
That's really their marketing strategy. Rob, let's talk about another area that you've spent a fair bit of time, which is Central America. Mm. I don't have a lot of experience there, but there's a lot of countries with dodgy reputations there, isn't there? Like Panama and Guatemala.
Absolutely, Mexico. So, and again, often it's the political situation there, which is the problem, and the sort of meddling often by the US in that area, which has given some instability. And so I was I did a big trip around Panama. And what's interesting is a lot of destinations have sort of taken their bad reputation and made that a thing, like made that a tour.
Right, okay.
So in Panama City, I did a tour like with a former gangster. So this old sort of colonial part of Panama City, which used to be really dodgy. I mean, there were drug gangs and killings and people being thrown off of balconies.
Yeah.
And so I did a tour with this former gangster around this area and so felt pretty safe because I was with him, and it's slowly being gentrified. But you feel really intrepid because you're in this place and this is where this stuff used to happen. And this wasn't that long ago. This was only in the late 90s.
Right.
And another good example is South Africa, where they've taken like Soweto tours and made that a tourist offering. So I did a cycling tour around there.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't have done that on my own, but because I'm with a tour guide and you're sort of looked after and chaperoned.
Yeah.
Then so there's quite a lot of people who are doing that and doing that quite well.
Yeah.
But I mean, there was a couple of times in Guatemala and Antigua when I was trying to find this one particular bar quite late at night, and so we're sort of wandering around these back alleys, and I thought, this could get a little sketchy.
Yeah.
But that could happen in London and, numerous places around the world.
Yeah.
So I think as long as you're sort of sensible and take the usual precautions, I wouldn't have any hesitation recommending people go to Central America.
Yeah. One thing I was going to ask, actually, is when you visit these countries that are thought of as being really dangerous, is part of the joy, this sort of thrill of going, of challenging yourself and going somewhere that could be scary and then finding out that it's really not, is that part of it?
I think there's an element of bragging rights, and we're seeing that more and more these days where travellers really want to get ahead of the game. They want to go somewhere that no one else has been. They want to put on their Instagram they're always trying to push the boundaries, or they want to go somewhere that people have been but perhaps doing it a completely different way. So this whole expedition, exploratory, that sort of travel is becoming really popular.
Yeah.
But it's becoming increasingly more difficult to go to places that...
That no one else has
been
to.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everything's already been hashtagged and...
And things are never as scary or bad or dangerous as we're often led to believe.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Mm. Is this sort of a cascading thing where you keep wanting to push yourself a little bit further and further?
Absolutely. And, I mean, I think that happens, and that's why people end up jumping out of planes in, you know, wingsuits and stuff. I mean, because, you know, just ordinary parachuting.
Because they've already been to Panama.
Wasn't good enough, exactly. And it's all about that bragging factor, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all about, I went to this place and I did this thing and I did a tour with this Panama gangster.
Yeah.
And people love to be able to do that sort of thing, to the point where, I don't know, when I was backpacking when I was younger, you'd meet these sort of extreme backpackers, and there was this real, you know, if you haven't crawled across the border at midnight under gunfire, then you're not a proper traveler.
Covered in bed bug bites.
Exactly.
I'm like, you've been doing it all wrong.
I do not need to do that to feel like I'm a real traveler. So there's a little bit of that almost snobbery at that end of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have no, that holds no appeal for me.
Yeah.
But I think people love to sort of say they've done something dangerous or, be able to brag to their friends that they parachuted.
And a lot of the time it's not actually that dangerous, which is what we find in these places when you go and you realize that the bad reputation is really not founded. It's actually quite safe for people on the ground.
Totally, yeah. I mean, I once heard a story, and this is anecdotal, so I don't know if it's true, but up in Kakadu, there was a tourist that was taken by a crocodile, I think it was. And I remember I was up there maybe the year afterwards, and I spoke to the guy who was either involved with the tour company and knew about it and said, oh, presumably that tour company shut down. And he said, oh, no, their bookings doubled the next year. Because it's like, if I'm going to go and do this tour, I want to do it on with the tour company that the guy got eaten by the crocodile. So there's this sort of natural like lure of that stuff where people want to be able to say that they went to the same place. And it's a curious element of human nature that makes you want to do that.
Yeah. The world is a really big place. And there's a plethora of different languages to learn, borders to cross, and cultures to negotiate. Intrepid Travel makes these things easy and allows you to maximise your precious time off. Instead of worrying about logistics, you can focus all your energy on having the experience of a lifetime, with the confidence to explore far-flung places with the expertise of a local guide. So check out the world's new frontiers today at intrepidtravel.com. I'm here with Rob McFarlane and Jenny Gray. We're talking about places with dodgy reputations and how they can be great. On the flip side of that, though, guys, is there anywhere you've been and realised that, oh, hang on, that the bad reputation is warranted? This is actually a scary place. I mean, I went to Sao Paulo, which was a great city, and I stayed with some locals there, and I had a really good time. They took me out to clubs and bars and really enjoyed myself, and at no point did I feel unsafe, even though that is a city with a terrible reputation. And one night they were saying to me, oh, you know, so how do you find Sao Paulo? Have you enjoyed it? And I said, yeah, you know, everyone says it's so scary, but really it seems perfectly nice to me. And they were all like, oh, I mean, we've all been held up at gunpoint, like at some point in our lives. And I was like, okay. And they're like, yeah, you should really be careful here. It's a dangerous place.
It's hard with those things, isn't it? Because then you think, well, I'd sort of never leave the hotel or the hostel that I'm staying. And so a lot of that is just down to pure luck. I mean, I know people who've landed in very established cities and got mugged their first day.
Right,
and I've lived in those cities.
I met a guy in Rio who got mugged three times in three days.
Oh, wow.
By the end, he just had nothing left to give.
walking around naked.
A guy came up to him at knife point. He was like, mate, I got nothing. Search my pockets if you want.
Yeah, I think my only one really was Kenya. And that was sort of almost my own fault as much as anything else. I booked a bus. I was with my girlfriend at the time. We booked a bus ticket. I think it was from Lusaka to Nairobi. We thought we were buying an express bus, which was going to get us in about 6 o'clock in Nairobi.
Yeah.
And we were sort of sold a dodgy deal. And it was one of those overnight local buses. And it was actually the driver at the end who said, look, you're going to get into Nairobi at 3 a.m. into this bus station. That's not a place you want to be as a tourist. And he was great. When we crossed the border into Kenya, he actually organized for some lodging by the border. It was sort of midnight. And even that was slightly dodgy, just trekking to this random place. It turned out fine. And we just got a car the next sort of day. So that was, I guess, a little bit of a scam. And it could have been much worse if we had arrived in Nairobi at 3 a.m.
Yep.
But on the whole, occasionally you feel a little sketchy walking around. But I've never had, touch wood, I've never had a really, apart from getting shot at, I've never had a really bad experience.
Yeah.
So I've been lucky.
How about you, Jenny?
I really haven't. I think the worst situation that I've ever had traveling abroad was by no fault but my own, just pure stupidity.
Yeah.
Happened to, bad decision, always travel with a backpack. I decided to take my handbag. My handbag fell over in the X-ray machine as I was leaving Amman Airport in Jordan.
Yeah.
My phone and passport slipped out. I was none the wiser.
Ooh.
Man. Got my transfer across.
Two things you really want to have with you. One can help solve the other as well.
I'm sitting at the border crossing wanting to travel into Israel and the Palestinian territories, one of the most notoriously bad border crossings at the best of times, and I reach for my passport. I don't have it. Don't have my phone.
Oof. What did you do?
I actually tracked down the tourist police, and they're in a tiny little office. We both, they barely spoke any English. I don't speak any Arabic, but we managed to, with a lot of phone calls and a bit of sign language, copious amounts of really strong coffee, they had it returned to me, which I was, I thought
wow,
it was long gone.
Amazing.
Both the phone and the passport.
Yeah. You got both of them back.
Both of them back, wow. 4 hours later.
So there you go, a country
like
that people might think is scary and dodgy. Not at all.
Absolutely. I think I threw them a little bit because I only had one stamp in my passport and it was an Iranian visa, which was really big with a photo. I think they may have thought it was part of the passport and they were sort of questioning if I was Iranian. I was like, no.
Right, okay.
Yeah. We got there in the end. So it was fine.
Yeah, right, okay. Are some countries more difficult for women than others?
I think there's definitely some extra challenges depending on where you're going to travel to.
Yeah.
But again, the reality is there's challenges wherever you travel in the world, wherever you live for that matter. As long as you do your research and you've made the decision that's right for you. For example, Iran has a really bad reputation about the dress code.
Right.
You get questions all the time. Yep. People think it's really limiting. And it's nowhere near what people expect when they turn up on the ground.
Yeah.
They're actually really surprised by some of our young leaders who have, you know, like bright red lipstick and painted nails and colourful scarves and are incredibly trendy and young and modern. So.
Yep.
It's just a little bit of...
you see women wearing the abaya, which is a sort of long cloak type garment, and then you see high heels.
100%. 100%. There's this whole hidden world that people aren't aware of. And, and you do get both ends of the spectrum. You get the super religious wearing the full top-to-toe chador, and then you get the other younger women who are really pushing the boundaries and the headscarves are low back on the head.
Yeah, just sort of draped around the bun at the back.
Yeah, cheekily.
Yeah. Tehran especially seems to be a lot more liberal than a lot of places.
Tehran and Shiraz.
Yeah.
And the average population there, I think, is the average age is around 32,
33. Yeah.
All of these young, independent, vivacious, well-educated people who were born into post-revolution Iran and are really challenging status quo.
Yeah. I was hoping we'd get to talk about Iran at some point.
I might just leave the room for a bit.
you also took your mum to Egypt, is that right?
I did.
And that was fine?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that really shows how perceptions on, you know, what was deemed unsafe or dodgy or scary in the past are really changing. Or people perhaps are more open to the fact that the reality is there's a degree of risk wherever you are in the world.
Yeah.
So I convinced my mum to come to Egypt with me last year. It was her lifelong dream to see the pyramids. And we brought my auntie along as well because none of her friends will go to Egypt with her for the same reasons.
Right.
And it was incredible. It was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like a lot of time people, you know, history plays a really big part in the reputations that some countries have. Mm. And Rob, you would know this from Rwanda and probably some other places as well, where those things happened a long, long time ago.
Totally. And often they're just in a bad neighbourhood. I mean, places like Jordan and Oman, I remember this guy saying to me, you know, we're a good place in a bad neighbourhood.
Yeah.
And Jordan Oman was the first time I went to the Middle East, and that was a really interesting experience, having gone there with all those perceptions of what happened in the Middle East over the last sort of 10 years, and it was an amazing place, incredibly welcoming people, probably a little bit more so than Iran, from what I've heard. And just a great exposure to that culture. I found it fascinating, had no problems at all, and really safe, very tolerant place for visitors, really welcome visitors. And then I went back a couple of years later and went to Jordan, and Petra is probably one of the most extraordinary places I think I've ever been.
Yeah.
And again, had an amazing experience there and got a really great insight into that culture, which, you know, has a lot of bad perception around it because of everything else that's going on there.
Yeah.
So
I went to the northern tip of Jordan with a tour group, and we were standing at this lookout, and the tour guide is like, you know, so over there to the left, that you can see there is Israel, and over there to the right, what you can see over there is Syria. And then he sort of paused for a second. He's like, we're so lucky to have good neighbours.
And you feel for those countries because they get really prejudiced because of that, because of where they are and what's happening around them. That's not.
I mean, Jordan has never really had any problems at all, but it's just the area that it's in.
Exactly. It's really. Don't you think it's interesting as well how quickly or slowly some countries recover from a tarnished reputation versus others?
Absolutely.
And it swings like a pendulum really quickly sometimes with no rhyme or rhythm or reason behind it.
Like Cambodia has had a lot of problems as recently as Uganda, but everyone goes to Cambodia now. That's the place that's just a normal destination.
Yeah. And it's really interesting when you look at, for example, the Smart Traveler ratings, you'll find different countries with the same ratings that you think, hang on, like, is that the same? Really? You'd consider, I don't know, Mozambique to be the same as Rwanda or somewhere like that. It's quite interesting.
And then you dig down into it and you realize that the trouble is maybe just on the border.
Exactly.
And it's you know, within 10 kilometers of the border, that's where the troubles are. And so that gives the country the entire rating that it gets.
Yeah.
It's really worth looking a bit further into than just scanning to see what color the warning is, basically.
Totally agree. And I feel for them because they have to come up with one rating for an entire country.
They do.
And these places are complicated with lots of different things going on. And so, for example, for Rwanda, I think it is exercise a higher degree of caution, which then escalates to reconsider your need to travel when you get near the borders with Burundi and Congo. Mm-hmm. And yet the World Economic Bank, I think, rated it the safest country in Africa. And so they said, they just have to come up with this one size fits all rating, which can be misleading sometimes, I think.
And we should mention, actually, that here on Flight of Fancy, we recommend that people check Smart Traveler before they book their tour or their trip.
Yeah. I find it really useful, actually, because it gives these maps with these sort of color-coded areas saying where you can and can't go, and it gives a much better breakdown than just... People tend to look at their headline rating and then just go based on that, and I think it's definitely worth drilling down.
Yeah. Well, how about, Jenny, how do you decide what is an okay country to go to?
Definitely Smart Traveler, so DFAT number one. Mm-hmm. That gives a really good starting point.
Yep.
And then beyond that, we're really lucky to have a global team of DMCs around the world who are our eyes and ears on the ground.
DMCs being?
Direct management companies that run trips on the ground. So they're our experts, our eyes and ears on the ground. And then...
What about for other people? You know, would you say check TripAdvisor or, you know, there's other travel forums out there that people can try and get an idea of what's going on the ground or find out where the tour companies are going there and think, okay, if they're running tours there, then it's probably going to be all right.
That's always a good first point of reference.
Yeah.
And it's not just tour companies who are running tours for travellers. Most of these tour companies have staff on the ground as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, companies wouldn't be running trips with their staff on the ground as well if they thought that there was unmanageable risk.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the only things to remember is that if Smart Traveler rates a country as red, as do not travel, then you're not covered by insurance, basically.
Exactly.
You're really taking your life in your own hands.
I think most tour companies are very aware of that. And so if they're a big, well-established brand, it's pretty unlikely they're going to be taking you into places that are too sketchy.
Yeah.
Or they'll be at least sticking to the areas of the country which are very safe and very predictable.
Are there ever any places that you guys have refused to go on safety grounds? Have thought maybe now's not the time? I know I had a trip planned to Israel once, and there happened to be basically some dramas with Gaza that started happening, and there were missiles being fired into Israel, and I just decided it wasn't worth it. You know 99.9% chance that everything would be fine, and you know, I talked to a friend of mine who was in Tel Aviv, and she said, you know, it's no problem. Every missile has been shot down so far, and I was like, that's not my idea of a good time, to be honest. We each have our own boundaries. Obviously, you've gotten used to a certain normal, and so have I. So instead, I went and rode a scooter around Sicily for a couple of weeks, which is probably far more dangerous, to be honest.
I'm surprised you survived that.
I think that's so true. Every traveller has their own different risk profile, and there's so many different factors will play into making that decision, and you really have to do your research and make a decision that's best for you.
Yeah, yeah. Would you agree with that, Rob?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't think of anywhere, actually, where the opportunities come up to go there, and I've sort of said no, purely based on those reasons. Normally it's with a tour company, and so I feel fairly confident because they're going there. And as someone who has to write about it, it's quite hard to sell stories on Syria and Afghanistan and places like that. So
yeah,
as much
reasonably
as I'd be tempted to go there, then you have to stick to within sort of fairly safe boundaries.
Yeah. Just to finish up, I'm going to throw this out to the room, and you can tell me one country with a bad reputation, one dodgy place that you would tell people that they absolutely have to go. And Jenny, I'm going to ask you, even though I think I know what the answer is going to be anyway.
I know, I sound like a broken record. I'm sorry, but Iran, hands down.
Yep.
Go there twice, three times if you have to.
Yeah, all right, good answer. Rob?
Oh, mate, I'm torn because Rwanda was extraordinary.
Yeah, but you only get one, so...
what I'm going to take to anyway. But I think people know about that. They know about the gorilla trekking. Yeah. I'm going to say Panama because Panama is a sort of gateway to Central America.
Yeah.
People rush through it on their way to Guatemala and Nicaragua and other places.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed with Panama. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff going on there. And if you do go to Panama City, do this gangster tour.
Right.
It's just a great insight into that culture, which wasn't and that atmosphere, which wasn't really that long ago.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, the one I would choose would be Colombia. Which has a fairly shady past, you know, with all the sort of drug dealings of Pablo Escobar, et cetera. But this is another country where all of that stuff is sort of in the past now. It's long gone. And it's an extremely friendly country, extremely beautiful country. You know, people are very welcoming. There's places like Cartagena, which is this beautiful Caribbean port town, which has a history of pirates that used to come through. And then you've got somewhere like Cali, which is the sort of home of salsa dancing. And then you have Medellin, which has really recovered into becoming this amazing cosmopolitan city from a fairly war-torn past. So, it's a lot of fun, basically, and worth checking out.
Excellent. Colombia and Iran, I'll put those on my list.
That's it. All right. Jenny and Rob, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it. If you would like to read more stories from me or Rob, you can check us out at traveller.com.au. And to find great tours, you can check out intrepidtravel.com. And to subscribe to Flight of Fantasy, check us out on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. And we'll see you next time on Flight of Fantasy.